This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight. This is a special pre-recorded program while VOA headquarters resolves some technical issues. I'm your host, Yehiz Wuhib, in Washington. Coming up,
UNICEF DR Congo representative Edouard Begbeder says COVID-19 not only poses a health threat to children, but exposes them to other dangers as well.
That's reporter Lisa Schlein in Geneva. Details coming up also. Kenya's public transportation drivers struggle during the coronavirus lockdown. And President Alpha Conde's party has won more than two-thirds of the seats in Guinea's parliamentary election. We'll have these stories and all the latest developments next on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Cases of the novel coronavirus are expected to top 1 million worldwide in the coming days. African nations have thus far tallied fewer than 10,000 cases in total, although there are fears the number will grow dramatically in the coming days, overwhelming weak healthcare systems. A number of nations have imposed strict lockdowns to force social distancing and slow the spread of the COVID-19. Rwanda has extended its two-week lockdown, the first on the continent, for an additional 2 weeks until at least April 19th. Togo has declared a three-month state of emergency to fight the virus. The small West African nation has about three dozen cases. Leaders of the G20 leading nations are discussing a new aid package to help African governments prepare for outbreak, including debt relief and new funding. While the world focuses on COVID-19, the UN Children's Fund warns thousands of children in the Democratic Republic of Congo are at risk of dying from epidemics other than coronavirus. Officials say the situation that would likely worsen as the spread of the COVID-19 threatens to divert scarce prevention resources. DRC authorities have confirmed 98 cases, including 8 deaths since the start of the coronavirus. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Children in DR Congo are at the mercy of many killer diseases that are preventable. Since early last year, the UN Children's Fund reports a measles epidemic, the worst in the world, has killed more than 5,300 children under five, caused nearly 17,000 deaths from malaria, and sickened tens of thousands of children with cholera. Author of the report, Simon Ingram, says more than 3 million children in DRC are not getting the health care they need, exposing them to epidemics. Speaking on a video link from Cairo, he says more than 9 million children in the country need humanitarian assistance.
This situation is certain to be made worse by the arrival of COVID-19. The scale of the pandemic in DRC is still too early to measure. Unless public health centers can provide immunization, nutrition, and other essential services, the lives and futures of millions of Congolese children will continue to be scarred or destroyed by preventable diseases.
Authorities have confirmed coronavirus cases in conflict-ridden South Kivu, North Kivu, and Ituri provinces. But note, most infections are in the capital, Kinshasa. Speaking on a video link from Kinshasa, UNICEF DR Congo representative Edouard Begbeder says COVID-19 not only poses a health threat to children, but exposes them to other dangers as well. He says schools are closed, increasing threats to their safety and well-being. He says children, especially in remote areas, face difficulty in accessing essential vaccines and health services.
Coronavirus will most likely divert the available national health capacity and resources and leave millions of children affected by measles, malaria, polio, and many other killer diseases. In the DRC, more children might die of lack of access to services or these main epidemics than from the COVID-19.
The report urges the government to allocate a greater share of its budget for vital health care services that will benefit newborn and young children. It also is calling for greater international support to strengthen the DRC's fragile health system. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Debate on the use of anti-malaria drugs to combat the coronavirus pandemic rages on as the drugs are rushed to be used on an emergency basis for patients with acute respiratory problems. VOA Salim Salamon has the details.
As anti-malaria drugs gain approval to treat certain coronavirus patients, experts urge caution. On Monday, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration gave short-term authorization to use two drugs, hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine, to treat coronavirus in certain emergency cases. The drugs are being distributed to hospitals and are to be used for patients exhibiting acute respiratory problems. President Donald Trump pushed for the authorization after a promising small-scale study in France showed hydroxychloroquine in combination with an antibiotic helped the recovery of coronavirus patients.
We're going to be able to make that drug available almost immediately. And that's where the FDA has been so great. They've gone through the approval process. It's been approved. And they did it. They took it down from many, many months to immediate. So we're going to be able to make that drug available by prescription.
Dr. Jeff Collier, a surgeon and the former governor of Kansas, has been an advocate for exploring the drug, saying it's one of the only medications available that has shown promise. Still, he said, it's not a cure-all and should be administered only by a physician.
This is not something where you should go to the pharmacy and purchase it and use it yourself because you think you're sick. It's most important that you and your doctor make a decision on whether it's appropriate for you. Right now, there are shortages of these medications worldwide, and so they really need to be reserved for the sickest patients.
Collier believes the urgency of the pandemic, which has infected over 850,000 people and killed more than 40,000 worldwide, demands quick action and unorthodox measures. He acknowledges the drug's efficacy is far from proven.
We need more data and more evidence in this. I'm the first person to say I've seen drugs that have looked promising and then they've turned out not to work so well. This is the one that we have. And so, as I say, you know, you go to war with the army you have, not the one that you wish you had, but then you keep on building with this.
Another study of about 100 patients in China found no evidence hydroxychloroquine helped combat coronavirus. The drugs, which have been in use since the 1950s to treat malaria, also have rare but dangerous side effects. Some experts have expressed unease to the speed of the approval. Dr. Cyrus Shapar is a physician and director of the Prevent Epidemics team at Resolve to Save Lives, a global public health organization with operations in Africa. He told VOA that even if the positive results from the small study can be replicated, there is no information on how patients will do on a long-term basis.
We don't usually make recommendations based on trials of 40 people or 100 people, because it's not enough people to know what the side effects are. It's not enough people to know, you know, for all the different age groups or sexes, you know, how does this drug work? We just don't have that evidence right now.
Shapar added that there are clinical trials going on around the world right now, and there may be better information about the drug's performance as soon as later this month. He also worries the drug being diverted from places in Africa and elsewhere where it's needed to protect against malaria.
So I think we've jumped the gun a bit in terms of trying to make this something that, you know, is a magic bullet for COVID-19. It isn't. It might have impact, but we don't know that yet.
Salim Salomon, VOA News, Washington.
The COVID-19 crisis threatens to disproportionately hit developing countries, not only as a health pandemic, but as a devastating socio-economic crisis over the coming months. Income losses are expected to exceed $220 billion in developing countries, and nearly half of all jobs in Africa could be lost. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
With an estimated 55% of the global population having no access to government-funded financial safety nets, the losses will reverberate across societies, impacting education and human rights. In the most severe cases, basic food security and nutrition will be threatened. Hahuna Eziakonwa is the Assistant Secretary General and Director of the Regional Bureau for Africa at the United Nations Development Programme, UNDP.
If the spread of the disease is not stemmed, the multidimensional consequences for the continent will be unprecedented. Added to this is the fact that there are latent vulnerabilities that many countries within the region continue to cope with. Some countries are in recovery, some are experiencing conflicts, while others are battling with the impact of climate change and other environmental factors.
Under-resourced health systems are likely to be overwhelmed. This may be further exacerbated by a spike in cases, as up to 75% of people in least developed countries lack access to soap and water. The senior UNDP official says the continent's biggest economies, such as Nigeria and South Africa, will not be spared.
Just give you an example of Nigeria, with over 90% reliance on the oil sector for government export revenue. Oil prices have already declined by 55% since the spread of COVID-19. This would, of course, affect the government's ability to implement development interventions and also impact its ability to even respond to the crisis itself.
Currently, South Africa is the continent's pandemic epicenter. Eziakonwa says small businesses will be hurt in the crisis, resulting in massive job losses.
Poverty is highest among the less educated, female-headed households, large families, and those living in rural areas, the peri-urban and the township areas. These groups are likely to be proportionally the most affected by COVID-19. And you have a large majority of micro small businesses that will be negatively affected, and they do constitute the main source of income for the majority of poor populations.
Additional problems such as poor urban planning and overpopulation in some cities, and even traffic congestion that slows access to healthcare facilities, may all add to the caseload. With more than 6 million refugees and 10 million internally displaced persons in Africa, Eziakonwa says the threat is huge among fragile states. The Nigerian-born diplomat gave more details.
We have Sahel hotspots and some parts of Lake Chad region, which are already immersed in deep crisis. We're monitoring closely and supporting preventive efforts, because if COVID-19 really hits these countries in a big way, it will be a crisis on top of a crisis. We're worried about Burkina Faso, which has registered so far the highest numbers in that cluster of countries in the midst of already very difficult situation.
Development experts say African governments need to do everything possible to cushion the knock-on effects on millions of people's lives and the economy. Supply chain disruptions, falling commodity prices, unprecedented outflows of capital and weak currencies will constrain efforts by many governments to tackle the crisis. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to a special recorded program on VOA Africa. I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington. Here is a recap of our top stories. Cases of the novel coronavirus are expected to top 1 million worldwide in the coming days. And debate in the use of anti-malaria drugs to combat the coronavirus epidemic rages on. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. Zimbabwe is in the middle of a 21-day lockdown to fight the virus that causes COVID-19. The lockdown sets out essential services that can remain open, but there has been silence about the homeless community. Reporter Kuzai Zanawashi has more.
Henry Chigama is with a non-profit organization called Eat Out Movement, working with the homeless community. He says the COVID-19 outbreak has left the homeless in a fix.
From what we know with how the homeless community is set up, they are probably not even practicing any social distancing because they don't know what it is. There hasn't been any awareness amongst the homeless community, which leaves them without information and not even knowing what the coronavirus is.
He says the homeless are the most vulnerable to the coronavirus outbreak.
I think they've got the highest level of risk because when we are talking about social distancing, isolation, the lockdown, and when we are in our homes, where are they? Where do they go to? They are still going to be out there in the streets.
He says the fact that the homeless stay in groups for security purposes is worrying because of the risk of the virus spreading among them. Add to this, Chigama says many are HIV positive, which will hurt their ability to fight the coronavirus if they become infected. Soup kitchens have been closed for over a week now, and with the lockdown in effect, very few vehicles made their way into the central business district. The homeless often make their money by helping drivers park their vehicles and washing cars. Chigama says the homeless are left in a desperate situation, especially when security starts chasing everyone from the central business district.
We have got a complete shutdown, like what South Africa has done. And where are they going to get food that they normally get from people? They beg to earn money. They wash cars. There won't be cars in town. And where are they going to earn the little money they get? If they are chased out of town, they are all these surrounding communities. They will run away to those communities.
Chigama says members of the homeless community may resort to breaking into homes as they are forced into survival mode. He adds government should follow the example of South Africa, which set up shelters for the homeless. He suggests turning some schools into shelters. He says that way the homeless can have a roof, good hygiene, and healthy food. Chigama says his organization is trying to raise funds to help the homeless during the lockdown. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashi from Harare.
Guinea's Electoral Commission has announced the party of the country's president, Alpha Conde, has won more than two-thirds of the seats in the country's parliamentary elections. The ruling comes despite an opposition boycott of the vote. The French news agency AFP reports the United Nations and the European Union have cast doubt on the credibility of the vote. The opposition has demanded a UN inquiry into police violence, which opposition leaders say killed a dozen people. With this victory, Conde's party can amend the constitution. It is a proposal to change the constitution that has been controversial, sparing mass demonstrations in which at least 32 people have been killed, according to an AFP tally. Critics fear the reforms will enable the 82-year-old Conde to stay in power for 12 more years. Kenya projects it could tally up to 10,000 coronavirus cases by the end of April unless more measures to restrict movement are taken to halt the coronavirus's spread. With social distancing and a nighttime curfew already in place, those working in the transportation sector are facing hardships. They are struggling with the dilemma of whether to carry on with their work and risk infection or stay home and earn nothing. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Countries like South Africa and Uganda have gone on lockdown as a measure to fight the coronavirus, which has spread to nearly every country in the world. In Kenya, the public is ordered to stay at home from dusk to dawn. This African nation is known for its matatus, a minibus used to transport people. It usually carries more people than there are seats in the vehicle. 43-year-old Jackson Mwangi is a bus driver in Nairobi, and he must choose daily between the risk of contracting the disease or letting his family go hungry.
But even if I fear, the other problem that faces me directly, immediately, is that do I have the reserves? No. I wake up every day, I make the little for my family, and that is what we eat each and every day.
Elizabeth Njoki also works in the public transport sector. She says some passengers are not taking good care of themselves in public places.
The flow of the commuters has just reduced. The other problem is some of the commuters would like to board the bus when it's full. Some of them don't want to use the sanitizers. And also because this virus, you cannot detect somebody who's sick and who's not sick. We are working with a lot of fear.
Kenya's Ministry of Health has directed the owners of the buses to disinfect themselves after every trip and provide hand sanitizers as one of the measures to cap the spread of the virus, which has claimed the life of one person. According to those familiar with the public buses in Nairobi, one bus transports up to 300 people a day. The Minister of Health Director, Patrick Amoth, said Monday that the coronavirus is spreading within communities.
This virus is not following a particular trend. Our modeling puts us at having about 1,000 cases by the first week of April, and we postulate that we'll have 5,000 cases by mid-April and potentially 10,000 cases by 30th of April.
Kenyan authorities are encouraging the population to stay at home, something Njoki, the mother of three, would like to do, but her financial situation won't allow it.
I would want to stay at home and be isolated, but it's hard for me because I have kids whom I'm supposed to cater for.
Simon Kimutai is the chairman of the Matatu Owners Association, a group that owns and operates minibuses.
I think what needs to happen is that there needs to be a lot of sensitization, including not only Matatu crew, including the service users. These are the people who are traveling. These are the passengers. That they should have their own sanitizers in their pockets. They should know if they are coughing that they should stay at home.
Kenya has 59 confirmed cases of coronavirus so far and has had one death. Mohamed Yesu for VA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's Newsmaker Interview Program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.